This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Who do you say is your favourite guest contributor? If we just focus it into the Championship, who'd be your favourite contributors to your show's Gab?
I love having Chris Reeve from Talk Norwich City.
Yeah, well played, mate.
Well played, sir.
That's the end of this podcast. No. Thanks for joining us here at the Blue Monday podcast, discussing the town up or down since 2015. I'm Rich Woodward, and this is a Championship special with our mate, the host of the EFL debate, Gab Sutton. And joining Gab and I to discuss the state of play in Tier 2 and to revisit our early season 1-24 predictions, it's Seb Brown. But let's start with Gab. Always great to see you on Blue Monday, Gab, and always great to see your content as well. The man who covers all the pyramid, at least the EFL pyramid. How's things going? A busy time.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks. Just come out of the January transfer window where, I don't know about you, but deadline day was absolutely mayhem. You know, you're trying to keep on top of everything. It's almost, too much almost sometimes. But it's been great. A lot of podcasting, having a lot of fun with that. Looking forward to talking with you about Ipswich and the Championship this evening.
Yeah, a little bit more focused for you than normal because you do spread yourself across all of the EFL clubs. For folk who haven't found your content so far yet, feel free to plug your Twitter or X account and wherever we can find you. But you essentially have got weekly shows covering all three of the EFL leagues, haven't you? And get people on, including some other Ipswich Town podcasters who may or may not be of good quality, but they try and supplement what you do. But yeah, you cover all the EFL clubs, don't you?
Yeah, well, I suppose I lean on people who cover all the EFL clubs. That would probably be the more accurate way of putting it. So I'm definitely I kind of like to have my sort of surface level view of clubs and how teams are getting on. But I think there's no substitute for the insight of fans who go every week. And I'm quite happy to dip into that really. And that's what I enjoy about the shows. I cover the Championship where we get a series of fans on every week covering different sort of vicinities of the league table. That's 5:30 on Wednesday. Same thing for League One, that's 7 o'clock on Wednesdays, and League Two is 7:30 on Thursdays. So have a lot of fun with it. Got a series of co-hosts as well, you can check that out. I've also tweaked some while we're at it, tweaked some sort of opinion starters on the EFL, which you can check out on my account that you can sort of reply with your sort of opinions on, and that's all over at Gab Sutton on Twitter, or X as it's now known. So you can follow me on Twitter at Gab Sutton, and you can follow the hashtag EFL Debate.
Quality. And who do you say is your favourite guest contributor? If we just focus it into the Championship, who'd be your favourite contributors to your show's Gab?
I love having Chris Reeve from Talk Norwich City.
Yeah, well played, mate.
Well played, sir.
That's the end of this podcast. Seb has contributed, obviously, as well.
I love having you guys on.
Frequent flyers there. But yeah, Seb, in terms of our knowledge, we have to kind of reset every week and restart when we do the pre-match show, don't we? It's Gab's knowledge is pretty encyclopedic, isn't it?
Yeah, crazy. I mean, we can barely keep up following Ipswich and playing, you know, 46 games a season. So hats off to Gab for covering all three divisions with the depth of knowledge that he's got. It is superb. Yeah, if you're an EFL fan, make sure you check out his stuff, because it is, yeah, like you say, encyclopedia-esque knowledge.
Should we talk about Ipswich then? Let's start talking. Let's reverse the roles as they're usually when we're together. When it's usually you asking us about Ipswich. Let's ask you about Ipswich. I'll put the run of games since the East Anglian derby, given you mentioned our mate Chris Reeve at Taunton Norwich City. Since the derby there, Gab, only one win in the league against Sunderland. A lot of draws and then a couple of defeats, including last time out at Preston. Are you concerned at all by that, or is it a lot of Town fans are looking at the fixtures, the calibre of the opposition, and just saying it's one of those things, and are you expecting things to improve? What's your take on things?
Well, do you know what, it's so funny that you mentioned the East Anglian derby, because I've got a couple of theories on it, which I'd love to sort of run by you and get either of your sort of takes on. But the first, I sort of wonder about, you know, the symbolism of drawing with Norwich, because the derby with was built up so much because their fans were incredibly apprehensive about that game, and they were absolutely delighted to get a point, realistically. And I think for Ipswich fans, it's almost tinged with disappointment at not winning, even though, you know, from the bits that I watched of that game, you were comfortably the better team in terms of general play. And I think it was a couple of moments from Johnny Ray that got them the point. But from then on, I kind of wonder about the symbolism of it, because it was a bit like a victory for Norwich, and they've sort of almost used that as a springboard to actually pick up their form. And then for Ipswich, you've mentioned one win since then, which was in mid-December, wasn't it? I kind of wonder a little bit about the symbolism, the sort of the anti-climax of drawing with Norwich. And yeah, it's so easy, and I'm sure a lot more goes into it than just this sort of basic symbolism. But from the outside, I'm really curious about that.
Seb, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, it was anticlimactic. There's no way around that. I think as fans, we all thought this curse since 2009 was finally going to be lifted, and that would be the springboard going into a really difficult run of fixtures. I think as well that the fixture list can't be ignored. You know, the sides that we've played, it was Leeds away, followed by Leicester at home. We lose George Hurst halfway through the first half of the Leicester game, which we know how important, how crucial he is to us. So that has to be factored into as well. And since then, we've just kind of struggled to get ourselves going again. That said, the Sunderland victory on Sky at 5:30 under the lights at Portman was a really impressive performance, and I kind of thought that was going to be the kickstart. And then we get the 89th minute equaliser at Leicester, and you think, right, here we go. And then Preston happened, Maidstone, obviously the game we don't like to refer to in the FA Cup, happened as well. So yeah, the Norwich thing I think maybe definitely kicked us a little bit, because I think we did our predictions for December, and I think pretty much all the Blue Monday team thought that was going to be a victory and a springboard going into Leeds away, Leicester at home, etc. And maybe it has knocked confidence a little bit, but I think the injury to George Hurst has been absolutely crucial as well. It's no coincidence that, you know, we've suddenly got Kiefer Moore back, got Kiefer Moore in. We've got a central kind of physical striking option in that number nine role again, and suddenly we suddenly do look more of a threat, as we saw in the second half against Preston at the weekend.
Yeah, the absence of Sam Morsey, Gab, through three games essentially, one retrospective ban off the was the away game, Seb? Middlesbrough away.
He said something to the ref, didn't he, or something?
A post-match, and then a two-match ban for accumulating 10 yellow cards, Gab. I think Seb's right. There's so much importance placed on George Hurst. And since the Leicester home game, you know, we got a great point in that game. We've not lost to Leicester this season, which is a feat that not many teams at this level will do. But I think George Hurst is so important, not least because I think he brings the best out in Broadhead and Chaplin. We've been debating this the last few weeks, and Broadhead's form has taken a real downturn, you know, ironically, since that Norwich game, when probably he should have scored at least two, maybe even three goals in that game that wins us it. But he's struggled to contribute because Hurst is doing all of this legwork for him and holding up defenders and holding onto the ball for him. And Chaplin as well. We were talking about on the flagship on Sunday. Chaplin's not been as best of late either. So Sarmiento's come in and made a contribution, which is great. But it'd be really fascinating to see how starting with Kiefer Moore might bring out the best in our number 10s.
Well, I definitely think that you need a centre forward who can be a bit of a glue for the rest of the team, because, I think we can see with Caden Jackson up top, it's just, you know, it's not the same as having George Hurst, because he's got completely different qualities. And in a way, I think Ali Alhamidi is a great long-term investment for the club, and I do think he can make a reasonable contribution. I don't see him necessarily doing that, starting regularly. I would see it more being from the bench if he wants to go two up top at certain points in games. But I think Leicester, Southampton and Leeds have come down with parachute payments, and they've got huge squads. So when they lose a key player, they've kind of got, you know, other options. I mean, you look at, for example, the strikers Leicester have got. They've got four strikers that, you know, almost anyone else in the league would be happy to have. Ipswich don't have that sort of luxury. So obviously, you lose key players, and you're not going to be as good for a spell.
Talk to us about Ali Alhamidi then, because I assume you've got great reports, glowing reports from him from AFC Wimbledon fans. You may have even seen him yourself. Obviously, in terms of high-profile, high-potential signings in the January window, I think we're quite unique in spending that amount of money on a high-potential player. You haven't seen a huge amount of that type of business. Talk to us, give us your views on that from a neutral perspective, Gab.
Well, what I'm really mindful of, Rich, is his best form for Wimbledon this season has come alongside a striker called Omar Bajil, who is a very selfless, hard-working striker who's pretty good in the air, and he's actually really creative as well, so he can slot those three balls through. And that really frees up Alhamidi to kind of focus and sort of channel his energy towards doing what he does best. And his main qualities are he's quick, he's strong, and he's got a real ruthless streak about him. Now, those qualities are really valuable. However, I'd not seen him use his strength in the hold-up sense so much as using it to really run onto the ball. For example, at a higher level, you'd say Romelu Lukaku is strong, but you wouldn't say he's a hold-up centre-forwards. And I suppose I'd use that sort of at a lower level with Alhamidi. So I'm really curious to see how he's utilised. Maybe there was part of me that was a little bit surprised, but that you've brought him in as opposed to maybe prioritising the Hurst replacement. But I think having brought more in as well, I think it makes a bit more sense. And maybe I could see him, you know, if Kieran McKenna wants to go two up top for the odd game, I wouldn't be averse to that, or within games possibly. But I don't see him being that lone striker, because he's at his best when he's got someone else alongside him who plays that role.
Sure. And Seb, you saw his debut against Preston. Yep. And actually on the field at the same time as Kiefer Moore, which is interesting to Gab's point there. What was your first impressions? I know we talked about this on a flagship, which you can obviously go back and watch in more detail there. But yeah, what was your impressions? Anything that Gab there said there sort of chime with your brief impressions of him at least?
Yeah, well, so he came on when Moore was on the pitch, and Moore came on at half-time, so he was already joining kind of the established striker already out there. He fashioned one chance by himself. He was strong and looked to get a shot off, and the pressing keeper, Woodman, made a half-decent save. And then for the second goal, our consolation in the 87th minute, he's right in there. The ball comes in. He's in the right place. Him and Kiefer Moore actually get in the way of each other, don't they, as they both go for the same ball. And I think that's kind of, you know, what you're going to need. We've lacked bodies. There you go. You can put a bodies tick up on the screen. We've lacked bodies in the box at certain times this season, and he looks strong. He looks quick. He looks direct. And I'm not sure, like Gab said, I think we'll mainly see him as a substitute role if Kiefer Moore is fit. Having seen the second 45 on Saturday, I'd imagine he's pretty much going to start most games between now and the end of the season, because his hold-up play was immense. But I think Alhamidi will contribute from the bench at times. He can play slightly wide, I believe. I've not seen any of AFC Wimbledon this season, so I can't comment too much on that. But I guess he'll be the option if Kiefer Moore has run himself into the ground and battered defenders for 75 minutes, he'll be the option to come off. And longer term, presumably he's more of the Caden Jackson replacement, because he's similar kind of player in terms, he's stronger than Jackson, but in terms of that pace, he probably offers you something that not many else in the squad can do.
Yeah, fair enough. Gabby, you mentioned the strength of Leicester. We've talked about this on your show on the EFL debate, how weird this season is in comparison to last season, and a lot of these similarities about the kind of dip in form, the drawing matches you should be winning, and the importance, sure, I guess, of the January window. Another probably a decent window, probably not as impactful as last season, but still just as important, I think. And big credit to the club, I think, and Mark Ashton for certainly getting the Kiefer Moore deal over the line. What's your impression of the trajectory of the top four now? Are you kind of buying, like we all did last season, that Leicester are the Sheffield Wednesday and they're off into the distance, but maybe they could be caught? I don't know. We all thought Plymouth might, you know, have a bit of a due a wobble. They might be the Southampton and are Ipswich the Ipswich. Are we going to have we've had our wobble with outside the top two now, and suddenly we're going to go on an amazing run? What's your take on things?
Well, I'd like to put to you guys my sort of second surface level theory on Ipswich that I'd love to kind of run by you a little bit. I think when Ipswich came into the season, I think you had quite a lot of respect for the league because you were kind of coming into it. And I think that was sort of reflected in the balance that I saw for this team. You know, admittedly, you conceded a few goals at home, but I also felt like watching the team, there was a plan for what you'd do if you lost the ball, and everything was so structured and organised. And I look at games like that 3-2 loss at Preston North End, where some of the chances that you gave away, and certainly the goals, it did look like you were wide open in transitions. And maybe we can put that partly down to personnel issues and, you know, one or two key players that we've mentioned missing. But I also wonder if there's a little bit of Ipswich, although they're a newly promoted club, have kind of got caught up in, I suppose, you know, I want to use the word expectation, I guess, in the sense that, you know, this is an opportunity to try and make history. And the standards, because they've done incredibly well, they are in this automatic promotion race with the standards incredibly high, with Leeds and Leicester and Southampton just relentlessly consistent. And I sort of feel like, especially in light of some of those draws that you've had recently, which, you know, sort of drop points, it feels like it's got to a stage where if we are going to push for the top two, draws aren't really good enough, even though you're still on a perfectly brilliant trajectory for where you are in terms of the bigger picture. But I almost wonder if Ipswich need to actually reset and go back to the mentality they had at the start of the season, where it is a bit more balanced and you do kind of respect the league a bit more, and there is a bit more structure. Because I feel like in that Preston game, where that was just a one-off, whether complacency, I mean, it's such an easy word to use, but is there an element to that? Or is there an element of just getting drawn out by the expectations and what having to win every time that actually you've lost a bit of balance?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought that there's a mental aspect to that perhaps as well. Certainly there's lots of different variables at play, but this is now a sustained run of not winning matches. And Seb, I don't know about you. I don't know if our patterns of play are drastically different, but maybe the mindset we go into matches is different, which is you come into the league and you hope for the best. You then pull off some really, I guess, what you would class as upset wins, really. The Sunderland away win, an example. Southampton away win, another example. And then suddenly when you get into the position of being the hunted, as it were, we talked about this mindset before, you then maybe take your eye off the ball a little bit against the likes of Preston, the likes of Stoke. I don't know. What's your take on Gab's second theory?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a hard. What we've got to make sure we do is stop conceding goals. We cannot keep conceding two goals a game and hope that we have enough firepower to get us out of the mire, because as proven in recent weeks, we don't have that. Now, I remember there was a bit of a, not criticism aimed at McKenna, but there was a bit of kind of questioning this time last year about, did he have a plan B, or is plan B just to do plan A slightly better and, you know, hope for different results? And I remember at the time, having signed George Hurst a year ago in the January window of 2023, we did start to go a little bit more direct in the second half of the season at times. And I was wondering, maybe the signing of Kiefer Moore might lead to the same kind of principles. You know, we might look to vary the way we play, because he's not going to offer the pressing kind of ness, if that's a word.
Pace.
The pace, the athleticism maybe that George Hurst can do leading from the front. His game is much more about creating chaos in the box, strong in the air, holding the ball up, bringing others into play. So will we adapt the way we play to focus on him? I think we probably will a little bit. So that will result in a slight playing style. As I said, they've got to get to grips with this two goals per game. I remember going on your show, Gab, back in, was it October? And Ollie was saying to me, you know, I think we were worried then that we were letting in pretty much two goals every single game. And it's now, you know, the start of February and we're still in the same boat. So that has to be, fixed.
At home, that was definitely the case at home. I'm sure you kept a good few clean sheets away from home in the first half of the season.
We did. But then we have started to concede on the road now. Three at Preston, four at Leeds. You know, it is starting to catch up with us a little bit now. So we need to get that ruthless kind of streak back again. But also I'm wondering, now we've dropped down to fourth, And pretty much most of the talk in the media isn't really discussing us anymore. You know, a few pundits are saying that we're destined for fourth at best. It becomes a three-way shootout between the three relegated sides, the three parachute payment sides. I just wonder if that kind of taking the emphasis off us now on the social on media and all the discussions online might just go in our favour a little bit. Let us, you know, the fixture list does get slightly easier after we've got West Brom this coming Saturday at 12:30 on Sky. After that, the next sort of 8-9 games do get pretty reasonable, and we can just quietly go about our business, maybe adapt the way we do things slightly with Kiefer Moore up front in attack. And maybe it will, well, we took the mick out of Paul Lambert years ago because he came up with this phrase, didn't he, saying it's better to be the hunted, to be the hunter rather than the hunted, after we went from being top of the league to third or whatever.
That was his most astute moment of management whilst in charge at Ipswich, by the way.
Yeah. I just think maybe this time round it might suit us a little bit, just to not be on anybody's radar. Fixture list gets slightly easier. Kiefer Moore's in the building. If they can just work out how to kind of shut up shop at the back, like we did last spring when we were on that crazy run of only conceding one goal in 14 games, whatever it was, we might just give ourselves half a chance to get back into the race while the spotlight is very much off us and on those three other clubs.
It is, again, we talked about it already, the similarities to last season. It is, you know, we played Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday in the month of January, I believe, maybe just about February, if I remember rightly, Gab, last season, and didn't beat either of those two teams. And, you know, we're drawing matches again. But it wouldn't surprise me if we do go on this kind of run that Seb is talking about. I think the trouble is, and we'll talk more about Southampton and Leeds in particular in a second, you just don't feel like Southampton are going to give up too many points, but they do have to
play a hard run, haven't they?
Go to Portman Road, yeah. Whatever Leicester's ground is sponsored now, and
West Brom as well, I think.
St Mary's.
And Ellen Road on the last day.
Maybe West Brom as well. So they've got four really tricky away days coming, so they're probably going to drop some points in those, so there might be a little bit of hope for you.
Will
to
be enough? Yeah, let's just remind ourselves of the games after. So we've got West Brom Saturday. That'll be tough. It's the 12:30 game, and I hate the 12:30 game. 12:30 games can, along with Southampton, they can piss off. We don't have, I don't have to censor my language, so I'm on here on Blue Monday. We can say piss off Southampton in the nicest possible way. But yeah,
you've kind of taken the edge off it now. You've said in the nicest possible way.
That's sarcastic. It's like, yeah, it's when you say, when you add a but into the middle of the sentence that kind of undoes everything. It's like, I mean it in the nicest possible way, but piss off Southampton. But yeah, you've got Millwall away, you know, a little bit tricky. Swansea haven't really got themselves together, two away games in a row, and then look at that. We couldn't want an easier pair of fixtures there, could we? Rotherham at home and then Birmingham under Tony Mowbray. I'm only joking, Gav. I'm only joking. You know, Mogga's made Birmingham a completely different proposition, hasn't he? Since he came in. Yeah. Plymouth away. Plymouth, will they have much to play for? Obviously, you're really good at home. Bristol City in there, Cardiff away, Sheffield Wednesday. I would describe them as hashtag winnable, but yeah, given our current form, you're not on a go too big on us at this stage, are you? You need to see a little bit.
Remind me what the personnel state of play is going to look like over the next couple of months.
I think we're at full strength.
Okay.
Apart from George Hurst, who's out till, I think if we see him, it will be, you're talking probably mid-April onwards from the sounds of it. Yeah. It sounds like he's pretty much done for the season. But apart from that, we're at complete full strength. The only couple of injuries are kind of squad players who haven't featured at all in Genoa Dinassi.
So really the only question is whether Kiefer Moore can, well, the striker position, whether Kiefer Moore can do enough against the ball and can sort of replace some of the qualities that you had with George Hurst, or whether you can find a different way of going about things like you've alluded to, Seb.
And the other thing as well, it's maybe clutching at straws a little bit. Cameron Burgess has been at the Asia Cup. When he hasn't been in the team, Seb, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't it in Leeds game away, was he? Certainly was.
No, he didn't.
Edmondson had a bit of a shocker, didn't he, at Deepdale as well.
He's been unlucky, isn't he?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, the second goal is offside. He scores the own goal, but it's offside. It's 2 yards offside the line, and makes a bit of a howler. So he's not really at fault for that one. He does quite well to get back, but then he does end up putting it in the back of his net. Yeah, so I think it was hard. He's been really
good. You're a very lenient man, Seb, fair.
He's been really good since he came in. He's been excellent, to be fair. We discussed this on the flagship show, me, Craig and Mikey on Sunday night, and I think unanimously we all agreed that Cameron Burgess will probably come back in because he's bigger, he's stronger, he's better in the air. West Brom on Saturday is going to be a physical game, so he's probably going to be needed for that one. And I think he'll come back in. But I like Edmondson. I think he's done well. I think he was just unlucky on the weekend.
And he's just to jump in on this, the other area I'm a little bit worried about, I don't think on deadline day you got yourself another fullback, did you? Because you linked with Marvin Johnson, but that...
We didn't, but Brandon Williams is coming back from United in about a week's time now. I think McKenna said 10 to 14 days at the end of the window, so his return is imminent and he'll provide both the right and left back cover, and Harry Clark can shift over.
That's a big plus, isn't it? Because I really like Brandon Williams. I know he's had his troubles, but I think he's really good on either, like you mentioned, really good on either side. I was at the Sheffield Wednesday game in September. He came on for Leif Davis when he got injured, just absolutely flying run down the left flank and put the cross in for the winner. So I think to have that's going to make a real difference in terms of keeping things fresh. So so that's a real plus for sure.
Should we talk about our predictions from the summer then? When none of us expected Ipswich to be in the top two. We all were in synchronicity on going for ninth place. Apologies if those who are watching on YouTube, is quite small. You can drag it and zoom it in, but we'll talk through it for those listening on podcast.
Rich, we talked about this off air. You've done absolutely brilliantly. I think for me, I've got about nine that I'll be happy with. I think you've got about 15 that are very, either on exactly on point or, excuse me, or very, very close. So, yeah, well done, mate.
It's very rare I get compliments on the pod, so
Friends.
Moving on, Seb, I'm covering your face with the league tables. We all got Leicester spot on, I think, and then also all of us have kind of Sunderland and Middlesbrough
in the northeast, didn't we? And it's not worked out at all, has it?
It's not been well placed. I mean, the Borough and Sunderland are kind of there or thereabouts, just outside, aren't they? Maybe Borough not doing as well as Seb and I expected. Do you expect them to? We've got a question from Chris in our in the Telegram group about dark horses possibly for a playoff spot and maybe going up with Sunderland and Middlesbrough. Gab, any positive thoughts on those?
I think, do you know what? I think they've both got some talent in their sides, but that neither of them have really been efficient enough. I think from Sunderland's point of view, Mick Beale coming in hasn't been brilliantly received by the supporters, so I think he's got to win over a few people there. And then I look at Middlesbrough and I think again they've got I think a lot of talent. I think they've got a lot of players who could open teams up, but I feel like in terms of efficiency, there's just something missing for me for Middlesbrough, probably at both ends of the pitch, and probably partly down to injuries in certain areas, partly down to losing the likes of Archer and Akpom from last season, and Giles you'd put in there as well. But yeah, I think they've got a lot of they've got players who can set pulses racing, but they're not as productive and efficient as I'd like them to be, and that's probably why they're 11th rather than in the playoffs, which is where they were last season.
Yeah, we were both expecting, I think, through our prediction, Seb, for Borough to spend the Akpom money, which hasn't been spent, has it? And then you could argue that both Sunderland and Borough have had not the greatest of transfer windows, with Borough letting one of their brightest prospects go, and Sunderland not getting the striker that their fans were chanting for at Portman Road. Are you expecting them to rally, or are you expecting...
Well, Middlesbrough, when we did the preview show back in December, they had an awful injury list, didn't they? I think it was 11, 12 players were out injured.
So
I've got no idea regards to their kind of squad fitness levels. If players start to come back, they could well make a push for sixth or fifth. Sixth is realistically what they're going to be playing for now. If they can get the squad fit, Sunderland not signing a striker is going to hurt them, isn't it? They were linked with Kiefer Moore like we were, to not get anybody in is a bit of a problem. You know, they came to Portman Road a month ago now. Fans were chanting, give us a striker, we want a striker. They've got, is it Rushian, who they bought in the summer, who kind of features off the bench. They played a false nine at Portman Road with Bellingham and Pritchard and Barr kind of fitting in that role. Didn't really work. So I think over time, especially if the relationship isn't repaired between Mick Beale and the fans, I could see them kind of dropping off it. And Middlesbrough, if their squad starts to get back to full fitness, could well be the ones to push for six.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Do you think Mick Beale's got a chance of success at Sunderland? Look, from the outside, Gab, it doesn't look like a good fit, does it?
Well, I was one of the ones when he first came in that thought, hang on, he's had a glittering coaching career. He's worked at, you know, Chelsea and Liverpool, and he's worked in Brazil alongside Rogério Ceni. And yeah, the career that he's had has been quite something. And even if you were to look on paper at some of the work that he did at QPR and Rangers, who are clubs that don't have a great structure, it was actually pretty competitive results on paper. And so I kind of wondered if you put the same coaching ability along into a different structure where the manager takes less responsibility for the recruitment, it could work out. But there's part of me that's wondering actually maybe what some of the things that the Rangers fans were saying might have been right. And he seems to be sort of, rubbing people up the wrong way a little bit at the moment.
Yeah, and we mentioned your club, Gab. Tony Mowbray going there and Alex Pritchard kind of agitating for a move himself to join him. Do you think they might regret letting Mogga go?
Yeah, possibly. I think he's... he's certainly the manager that we need now, because he's someone who can just... We've had such a chaotic seat going from the high to the low. We just need someone who's just a really reliable championship manager. And I think he's better at probably developing players than... as well, because he is very good at that. He did that really well, I think, at Blackburn and at Sunderland. And he's just such a likable person as well. And I know that that's not everything. Like, you can be a really likable person and manager and not be a great manager. But it takes the temperature out of certain situations if you've got a manager who supporters can identify with and they feel like, yeah, I like him, I'd like to go for a pint with him. It's not everything, but it definitely counts for something, I think.
And we've got a lot of love for Mogga down here as well, don't we, Seb? Mm. A lot of time
absolutely
for Mogga.
Yeah, absolute legend. Obviously, like you say, I think it's a really sensible appointment for Birmingham. I was quite surprised they fired Rooney so quickly, you know, having spent big money to bring him in, but you know, I mean, to the big fanfare that came with him. I thought they'd give him the window to try and, you know, build a squad in his own image, play this, what was it, no fear football, they said, rock and roll football or something, was it, when he was appointed? I thought they would back him. Yeah. So I was surprised when they made the change, but that's a really, really sensible decision. Mowbray's obviously a legend for us Ipswich fans. He'll get you stable, he'll develop young players, he'll play decent attacking football, and he normally ends up leaving clubs in better positions than when he went in, doesn't he?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. You can say, and they'll go again in the summer as well. And, you know, it might be back just outside that top six again. Let's look more about any kind of outliers there. Gab, you were big on Mike Duff, hence your sponsor prediction. But
do you know what? I think it's one of those things where, you know, hindsight's wonderful thing. I think maybe on reflection, the fit wasn't great for Swansea because as a club, historically, they do pride themselves on smooth possession-based football. And although Michael Duff is far from a long ball merchant, I don't think you'd... I think he likes his side to be able to mix their game up and sometimes play a bit more direct, and it's not what they've been used to under Russ Martin. And I think that's kind of that. And also, do you know what? Michael Duff as well is a very sort of brisk character. And I think when he's managed clubs where the fan base kind of know what he's about and know that he's an honest guy with the right intentions, he's actually really popular. So, you know, at Cheltenham, he was a club legend there, and Barnsley tends to be a town that, you know, values people like him. But then I think when he goes to Swansea, the fact that he doesn't show his emotions much, and I think that kind of rubbed people up a long way. So, yeah, the fit wasn't quite right for him. I thought that his managerial ability would kind of overpower that, but that's not proven to be the case. He really struggled, and yes, Swansea having to rebuild again.
Yeah, well, Luke Williams, someone that you've got a lot of respect for, done great job at Notts County, you know, against the odds, I guess. You know, not against the odds, but unfortunately, the National League and the one team that goes up, and it's Wrexham, you know, at the wrong time, isn't it, kind of thing, but did well in the playoffs and have stabilised the league too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think he's probably more of a tactical idealist than maybe Michael Duff was, and probably his philosophy, if you like, is more lined up with what Swansea fans want. So probably the fit might be a little bit better with that. So we'll see how he gets on. I know he's always been a really highly rated coach throughout his career, so looking forward to seeing what he can do. And I think he'll be sort of low mid table for Swansea.
We will point out the good, we'll point out the improvement areas, but we'll also give you enough praise, Gab, for the only one of us who gave any credit to Liam Rossina at Hull, who's had
You two had
Go for us. Yeah, it was difficult to know how to call it, wasn't it, Seb, on Hull, but. Yeah,
very much so. Really well. Yeah, and I didn't anticipate this January splurge of money either. I think if we'd have sat here back in, when was it, July, we did this originally, and you said Fabio Carvalho will cancel RB Leipzig he just moved to from Liverpool, that loan will get cancelled, and he'll end up at Hull when you do this again in February. I think we'd all have been shocked, but yeah, fair play, we got that completely wrong. We had them, I didn't think they'd go down, but certainly lower third of the table, but you had them pipped for the playoffs, didn't you?
Yeah, I think for me, I could tell the progress they were making under Liam Rossina, because although they finished 15th last season, it was, I think it was top 10 form from when Rossina took charge. And they lost 6-28 under him last season. And that was playing without a centre forward for much of that time. So they drew a few games that they might have won with a centre forward. And then they added a little bit of quality in the summer. So it was like, you know, you could easily look at it and say they finished 15th last season, unproven manager. But I like to think I sort of saw the trend going upwards. And I think the ownership is quite a big thing as well. They've got ambitious owners, and there seems to be a really good... we've talked about fit, and maybe at certain clubs, certain managers who may have done really well in different scenarios that haven't quite worked. I think the fact Liam Rossina has got this sort of family history with Hull, and the fact that he's so embraced the club, and he was a player there, I know it's not everything, but when you put that alongside quality coaching, alongside a style that fans are happy with, alongside a really good culture within the club, all those sort of things do add up, and I think that's what we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, some great young recruitment of young players as well. So, yeah, a lot of respect for what Hull are doing there, and Rossina particularly. In terms of other bits and pieces, I think there's general, there's a lot of muchness there. And in terms of the bottom three or four, I think you weren't particularly hot on Preston, but they are actually, until they beat us, one of the teams struggling for form in the league. But otherwise, I think a lot of consistency around Huddersfield. Seb thought the Warnock effect might
They had Neil Warnock still at this point, so I thought he would get them. So if I went for Cardiff to go down, I thought they were pretty much nailed on. You guys both had them surviving, didn't you? I thought they would go down, but started the season well. I know they've dropped off recently, but they'll be fairly comfortably mid-table now. That was my outlier. QPR and Rotherham were my other two to go down, which I think is pretty much consistent with what you guys put as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the relegation spots, it does feel like someone needs to go on a bit of a run. Maybe Huddersfield getting that 4-0 win against Wednesday last time out might kickstart something for them. But what we're going to do, we've reflected on the season so far and the transfer window, and I've given each of us three swaps. So we're allowed to move a couple of teams around, three each, to see if we can finesse our predictions and make the table look a little bit more akin to what we're seeing at the moment or where we think that will be. It's not going to be perfect because of that. And so here's what we've got. Gab, do you want to go first with your changes? It's a bit small, but you've promoted Ipswich to automatic spot from ninth, I think by virtue of the fact that you can't really do any jiggery-pokery anywhere else. But you swapped us with Sunderland there, haven't you?
Yeah, I don't. Well, so Sunderland. I had this theory that Sunderland, you know, with his young squad, and they got into the playoffs last season, and yeah, maybe a bit more luck with injury. I had it all worked out. I thought they were going to be in the autos this season. That hasn't quite panned out. And I actually thought Ipswich might need a year to sort of, you know, maybe find their bearings. And yeah, top 10 would have been a great season. I'd swap those. And then if you can just get the table up again, just to jog my memory.
Yeah, so there's a Southampton switch. Is it with Borough, I think?
With Middlesbrough, yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And then Swansea and West Brom. I think I underestimated the Corbrand effect at West Brom. So that's really made a difference for them, and they're such a well-coached side. So yeah, West Brom, I think, finishing the playoffs with Hull. And then, Middlesbrough, I think, will miss out. And obviously Southampton will be in the top six somewhere or other.
I mean, this is an imperfect exercise because we've got some weird rules and stuff like that. But presumably your top six actually in reality isn't too dissimilar to that. Probably Southampton and Ipswich swapping places, maybe, if we're being harsh. You can be honest. Yes. Okay.
Yes, possibly. Yeah. It's because I don't think Southampton, defensively, they are going to be stretched by some of those really tough away games. So I'm not all in on Southampton yet. And then Leeds are a side that I really like, in terms of the attacking options that they've got. We'll see. But yeah, I think I probably would go with Leicester and Southampton as my top two, if you ask me right here.
Are we seven danger of not giving Leeds enough credit, of obviously winning they seem to play games of in advance of everyone. I don't know if that's good or a bad thing or not. Farker, obviously an expert of getting teams out of division, that home crowd, when it's with them, it's pretty formidable, as we know. Have you got is there a chance that Leeds gate crash top two for you?
Well, there's always, I swapped them into the top two because of the rules that we had, because otherwise I had to put Middlesbrough in the playoffs, which I don't think will happen. So Leicester for me, a dead search for the title. I think if you push me, Southampton probably will finish second, but I've gone for Leeds because of the formula we had. I guess the thing with Leeds is they're always capable of throwing in a random result, aren't they? That's the thing about them. You know, we've seen this ridiculous consistency now from Southampton. Is it 21 games unbeaten so far? They're just absolutely relentless. And Leeds will win five on the bounce, and you suddenly think, right, here they go. They're going to go on a real tear it up now, and then they'll go and lose at home, away to Preston, or they'll, you know, go away to Stoke, for example, and get beaten. So I guess it's that thought that they are capable of those weird, random championship bonkers results, which kind of makes you think they might have to settle for the playoffs, given how incredibly relentless and incredibly consistent Southampton have been for the last, 4 months now?
It's worth noting at the time of recording that Leeds still haven't managed to break the deadlock away at Plymouth in their cup replay. That's not a game that I'm sure anyone wanted, certainly Daniel Farker. So we'll keep an eye on that one. But yeah, you're right. I think there is always a little bit of a blow up that might happen with Leeds, which you don't
they'll probably stay unbeaten at Elland Road. They've not lost there all season. I can see that easily, but you wouldn't be surprised if there are a couple of games on the road, real strange ones. You know, they might go to St Andrews if they haven't been there yet this season, for example, and you could see them dropping points pretty much out the blue. They can be a bit of a coupon buster sometimes.
Well, like us, they lost to Preston, didn't they? They drew at Rotherham, like us,
lost away to Stoke, didn't they, when Alex Neil was on a really bad run of form, I think, if I remember rightly. So yeah, they could just throw these random results in, which might well cost them the end of the season going into a playoff campaign. But I'd rather they go up. If we're in the playoffs, I don't want Leeds at Wembley. That would be horrible.
With Leeds, that if you were to look at their first 11, you'd say there's six or seven positions where they've got, you know, a brilliant player that, you know, that they'd be really happy and, you know, would be one of the best players in the league in that position. But then there's also four or five areas, so that where you'd kind of ask a question as to how some of the how that player that they've got might stack up to the best in the league. And maybe that's a factor behind Seb's point that sometimes they do drop points because the sort of the weakest areas sort of hold them back a little bit, where when they look at their best, you've got Jorginho Ruta, who's been absolutely fantastic. They've got Nonto, who's been amazing recently, hasn't even been getting into their best, into their 11, because you've had Crescentio Somerville, you've had Dan James, you've had Bamford hasn't even been starting much, they've had Joel Pirro. So I think at their best they are outstanding. But I also feel like they're a little bit short in certain areas, and maybe that holds them back in terms of the odd one-off result.
Yeah, fullback area isn't the best, is it? Mm,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, 17-year-old at right back.
Yeah, and any further thoughts on your switches there? You've nudged us into the, like I have said, you've nudged Ipswich into the top six there from ninth, with Sunderland not particularly difficult one. You've then boarded the Gab Hull train.
I have, yes.
6 months a bit too late, but you've nevertheless gone for Hull in
sixth. I think I had Watford in sixth at the start of the season. I thought, under Ishmael they might do okay, but I've swapped them out because they're falling away. And I guess West Brom was one that weren't really on any of our radars at the time, were we? Mm. In the original table, I think Gab had them 15th.
There's takeover issues, wasn't there? I think
11th.
Maybe.
Yeah. I kind of thought they'd be closer to the playoffs, given the manager, given Carlos Corberan. So I think they will finish fifth, and I think it's then a shootout for sixth between the likes of Hull, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, those sides that are in and around it, I guess.
Coventry.
Yeah.
Let's finish off with a few questions then. I've made similar choices to you guys, and folk can let's put the right one up there. Yeah, see that there. So I've nudged Hull up, I've nudged Borough up, I've switched Borough and Southampton and Ipswich as well, and Sunderland. So yeah, very similar to Seb's actually. But in terms of, let's put the actual league table up on the screen there, so we can focus our attention. Chris asks from our Telegram group, assuming the current top four will at least be in the playoffs, which other teams do you think will feature, and who could be the dark horses there? Any names dropping in mind there for you, Gab and Seb?
I'll come in on this. I actually think the top six will stay as it is, because obviously the current top four are non-negotiable in terms of top six. And then you go to West Brom, who I think have got second best manager in the league. I'll say second best because I'm on it. Switch podcast. And then you've got Hull, who I'm really big on, and I'm very confident that they're going to get into the top six. I don't think Coventry have got as much quality as they've got as they had last year. I don't think Sunderland have got as much unity as they had last year. I think Norwich have still got some question marks on, although since Josh Sargent returned for them, they've been a bit better. Preston, I don't think, are good enough for the top six. Watford, I think, are too inconsistent. Middlesbrough don't have the efficiency. So, yeah, I'm pretty set on, although, in terms of on paper, you would think, only 4 points between sixth and 12th. So maybe I am being a bit too bullish on this. But yeah, I do feel like the top six is going to stay as it is.
Do you see any dark horses or any kind of Ian Dowie, Crystal Palace-esque crazy runs, Seb, from anyone?
Do you know what? You might be a bit before my time in terms of Ian Dowie crazy runs.
I can't think of anyone else who's gone on. I could say Kieran McKenna's Ipswich in League One last season is an example.
Blackpool in 2009-10, didn't they? They put together a run, didn't they?
Yeah, but yeah. Anyone doing anything ridiculous, outlandish, Seb, to get in the top six for you,
it's bunching up, isn't it? It's getting closer. I'd say Middlesbrough, what are they, 12th? But they're only themselves 4 or 5 points off it, aren't they? So although they're kind of 6 places below the positions, they're nowhere. They're really close to it in points. So I don't think anybody, I can't see anybody from the bottom half of the table going on a crazy run getting in there. Middlesbrough, if they get their players back, might threaten both Coventry and Hull. I think it'd be one of those three for me for sixth place. I think Sunderland will drop away without a striker. Preston have been in awful form. We discussed, most of their stats are kind of bottom relegation zone kind of stats for shooting, possession, passing, that kind of stuff. So that tends to catch up with you. Norwich are only one bad result away from I was going to insult them, the locals getting restless and getting back on Wagner's back. So I think out of all those lot in the bottom, but that the bottom kind of third after the playoffs, maybe Middlesbrough, but I expect it to be either Hull or Coventry.
Another couple of questions, Gab, before you say goodbye. Over Nick asks, over half the EFL clubs have changed manager since the start of the season. It's probably a normal occurrence these days. Which appointments have caught your eye and why? He calls out Joe Edwards at Millwall, but any other names? You may want to talk about Joe Edwards, but thoughts on that one?
In terms of recent appointments this season, a familiar name for Ipswich fans would be Paul Hurst, who's gone to Shrewsbury. And that was
long way around.
Obviously the club that he got into the League One playoffs and onto an automatic promotion race a few years ago, which actually earned him the Ipswich job. And that could be quite a nice fit for him. Tell you what, Daryl Clark as well has actually done a really good job at Cheltenham, because when he first came in, they hadn't scored a goal in their first 13 games in the competition.
We were talking about that on our podcast, and that was, they were League One, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly. I think that, well, no Cheltenham player, so that there was an own goal in an EFL Trophy defeat. So that was their only goal in the first 13 games, which is quite remarkable. I don't know what the record is for that. So actually for Cheltenham to still have a glimmer of hope of staying up, I think is, speaks to the job that he's done, definitely.
Yep.
Can I jump in? Do you think Steve Cotterill going into Forest Green is a decent appointment given where they were in the kind of the two managers they've had so far this season with Ferguson and Troy Deeney? Do you think he can possibly rescue them, or too far gone?
Possibly. I think it's a big jump for them. But one thing that stood out for me in League Two is there's lots of high-profile managers that have dropped into the bottom half of League Two. So you've got Grant McCann, who's at Doncaster. You've got Danny Cowley, who's at Colchester. You've got David Artell, who's at Grimsby. You've got Carl Robinson, who's at Salford. Even Nigel Adkins, who you might be familiar with, Tranmere Rovers manager. So it feels like there's lots of experienced managers in the bottom half of League Two, and some of them are mid-season appointments. And I think it's because you've got coaches like Kieran McKenna, who are kind of, because they're doing so well as a first-time manager, more clubs are being tempted to go down that route. So actually good managers are getting almost pushed down the pyramid a little bit.
Yeah, or up to Aberdeen maybe. Yeah, brother-in-law Cowley fan, as you know, Gab, I'm very big fan of the Cowleys. And the great thing about the Cowleys that you get is, you know, you obviously get 100% effort on the pitch. You also get a bit of investment in time in the community, don't you, and trying to galvanize that. And you know, the ownership there hasn't been necessarily been popular or universally popular and liked at Coley.
Well, do you know what, Rich, he was actually, I'm sure he was linked a couple of times with the Ipswich job when you had
various times. Yeah,
it was after Lambert left. It was, yeah, I think it was pretty much was
between the Cowley or Cook,
and
wasn't
Paul
it?
Cook, yeah. And we were all kind of debating which one we'd rather see. So that was their kind of big moment to get the job. Also, we went down the Paul Cook route, didn't work out, and he went to Portsmouth instead, I think, in the same summer, wasn't it? They went to Portsmouth, I think.
I wanted Cowley, but hey ho.
I wanted Cook, so.
Yeah, there you go. Never mind. Can't always be right. Captain Hindsight over here. Finally, Dave asked, when we kind of talked about this already, Gab, but we've got our eyes on the next transfer window already. Dave says, we just signed a player from League Two, beating other Championship clubs and maybe a Premier League club to his signature. Who do you think may be the next lower league player to make such a jump up the ladder? Have you got any names in mind there?
Give me a, well, we've seen Adam Mayer, Morecambe has earned a move to Millwall. So I think that shows, he's a really exciting prospect. And Conor O'Rourdan, who's at Crewe, has gone to Blackburn. So they would be other examples of players that have, gone through. Boson Lawal's having a great season at Fleetwood on loan from Celtic. He's recently been moved into midfield since Charlie Adam came in, and he was absolutely brilliant when they beat Port Vale 3-0 on Saturday. So he's at Celtic at the moment, but whether he'll have some interest or could be one to watch in future at Celtic, maybe. Boson Lawal's definitely a name to keep an eye on.
There you go. And a name that I can't wait to hear Seb pronounce on the podcast. Before we say goodbye to Gab, a few bits and pieces to mention here at Blue Monday. We're back live for the pre-match show Thursday, 8 p.m. Seb and I talking West Brom. And as always, the flagship show Sunday night, talking after the fact about West Brom, Sunday, 8 p.m. with Ben back in the host chair with Dave and Joe. We've got our NordVPN promo at the moment as well. Check the link in the description, either on podcast or YouTube, and get yourself a discount and support us in the process. And as always, there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. And also, you may have noticed that we're not sponsored on this podcast, apart from that NordVPN affiliation. If you want to, if you've a local or independent business and want to slap your logo on Blue Monday content in the midweek, give us a shout at Blue Monday ITFC on Twitter or BlueMondayITFC@gmail.com. Let us know. Very happy to support local businesses and hopefully, lots of people watching this stuff and might give a platform to your local business, whatever you're doing. So give us a shout there. We mentioned West Brom. Let's talk about that before we go. Seb, are your feelings going into that one?
Well, they don't travel well, do they? They're not a side that's great away from the Hawthorns. I think we'll discuss it in more detail on Thursday night, but I think their away form is pretty much a pointed game. It's nothing to write home about. Very strong at home, as we found out in the back end of November, where we didn't lay a glove on them. You know, they scored goals at crucial times, an early set piece, was it 5 minutes in, and then one a minute after halftime or so that absolutely killed the game. So I think it'll be a physical battle. I'm looking forward to it as a spectacle. Like you, I'm not keen on the 12:30 games. It seems to be hard to get the atmosphere going and all that kind of stuff, but we shall see. After that, the fixture list does ease slightly. I think we'll win it because they don't travel well away from home, and obviously we've now got big Kiefer in the building to go in our favour.
Gab, you've got no skin in the game apart from maybe a bit of dislike of West Brom because of your affiliation to Birmingham.
We've got quite a friendly relationship.
You don't all love each other, no? Yes. I thought you all hate each other. Do you not?
No, not really. I think because Villa are probably West Brom's biggest rivals, and they certainly are biggest rivals.
Everyone hates Villa, yeah.
So it's like we
the
all
enemy
kind
of my enemy is my friend.
It's a little bit like, you know, how all the Yorkshire, so pretty much all the Yorkshire clubs hate Sheffield Wednesday and hate Leeds because they're the two biggest clubs in Yorkshire. I think it's kind of a similar thing in West Midlands, where Villa are by far the biggest club, and we all kind of gang up on them. So that kind of dilutes any rivalry that we've got with other clubs. Although Wolves we're not keen on, so
even more reason to give a neutral perspective then. What's your expectations of this one?
Good question. I'm probably going to go with Ipswich to get back on the road and get back to a victory. Now you're at full strength. I'm kind of hopeful for you to get that win. I'm going to go with it.
It'd be good to turn the corner. Gab, thank you so much for your time. Seb, as well, thank you for getting involved as well. Maybe we'll come back and we probably won't check back on our predictions, but I'm sure we'll do this again next season. And in the meantime, at Gab Sutton, I think it is on Twitter/X, EFL debate every week. And you paused at just the wrong time there. Perfect, you're back. But yeah, thank you, Gab. And anything else you want to shout out before we say goodbye?
That's pretty much it. You can follow me on Twitter at Gabsutton and follow the hashtag EFL debate for lots of EFL content. So get involved.
Fantastic stuff. Seb, I'll see you Thursday. Everyone else, enjoy the rest of your week and we'll see you soon.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.